me thank Rob and Sabrina and the amazing team at PI for coming in at the last minute and saving us from a year, God forbid, without a strings conference and making do with the smaller venue, with the online, and well, at least from the last half hour, it seems all to be flawlessly organized. So thank you very much. And does this beautiful chalkboard come with chalk? Yes, it does. Okay, I have to also have to say I am a blackboard aficionado, and this is the running for the nicest blackboard I've ever used. Okay, so I am going to talk about some work with Jordan Kotler on cosmic R equals EPR in DSCFT, and there's ongoing work with Noah Miller and Tianli Wang in generalize this to the celestial context, but we haven't gotten that far. So let me start out with a few words about ER equals EPR. So the simplest and best understood example of that phenomena is in Schwarzschild ADS. And the idea in Schwarzschild ADS, so here you have two asymptotic regions, an ADS boundary, and naively you would think that the conformal field theory that lives at the boundary of each ADS region, which we know exists by virtue of our great understanding of ADS CFT holography, would be dual to its associated causal region, which would look like this. And that's true if we describe the theory in the so-called Rindler vacuum, which excites modes according to the L-naught time there. And then you get a vacuum which is singular here. There are no correlations between these points, and the two CFTs don't talk to each other. But this vacuum has singularities here. It's not a physical one. Singularities along the horizon. Instead, one would like to look at the Hartle-Hawking vacuum, and then you have sort of ER, which is, EPR. You have correlations between quanta across the wormhole here, and then there are correlation functions because those quanta in that vacuum are correlated as the points come close to each other. And another phenomena which comes at the same time is that you get the Einstein-Rosen bridge connecting the two Schwarzschild black holes. And so this is the origin of the wonderful slogan, ER equals EPR. One is the quantum version of an effect, and the other is its quantum dual. Now this can be, was beautifully this idea. So the basic idea that one would like to, and of course many people have worked on this, this isn't meant to be history. The basic idea is that space-time itself, starting from a holographic dual, is built up out of quantum entanglement. And that also can be seen with just a single copy of the ADS-CFT. There's a beautiful story from Elmaro Dong and Harlow that you can understand using some deep ideas from quantum information theory that the structure of the space-time in the interior of the black hole is built out of the quantum entanglement of the subregions of the CFT with itself. And that's a story I'm sure you've all seen. But I think that we, most of us in this room would believe that holography and the ER equals EPR, which is a closely related thing, are not limited to anti-de Sitter space. Yet there have been precious few concrete generalizations of this principle, which we think is completely complete. And indeed, I would say that its origin could be traced back to the Bekenstein-Hawking area entropy formula, which says that the number of states in a black hole is goes like the area of the black hole where the holographic plate lives, rather than the volume inside the black hole. And so another example of this ER equals EPR, which does not involve ADS in any way. So the goal is to generalize this beyond ADS. I'm going to talk about the generalization to De Sitter. Is you could consider the pair production of a pair of magnetic monopoles and a magnetic field. And if we look at the correlation function between a point here and a point here, it goes like 1 over the square of the distance between where the magnetic monopoles are created. But then, and this is a calculation which can and has been done analytically, you can make these monopoles in some special theories, you can make them smaller and smaller, and suddenly they get in their Schwarzschild radius, and there's two things, there's a kind of phase transition in this picture. And what happens in this picture is they get into their Schwarzschild radius, and this turns into a black hole, make them smaller. This turns into a black hole. The instanton that creates them has a wormhole connecting them, an Einstein-Rosen bridge. And at the same time, the instanton action jumps discontinually at the point where the event horizon forms, and it gives a factor, a single factor of e to the s black hole. This comes out of the semi-classical calculation, which tells you that there must be each of the microstates of the black hole circulates independently around this loop, which tells you that there must be a quantum correlation between this black hole and that black hole. They're created in a pure state. If there had been a 2 there, that would have been really bad. That would have spoken for a breakdown of determinism, but fortunately there was only 1. And at the same time, you can compute the Green function, and now you find that there is a correlation between these two points, which is not this distance, but just the distance through the wormhole, which can be arbitrarily short. So this is an example of ER-EPR and the emergence of space-time from quantum entanglement, which was done long ago and has nothing to do with anti-De Sitter space. Okay, so I want to try to understand this in the context of DS-CFT. Now, unlike ADS-CFT, we don't have some systematic way, top-down way of thinking of this as coming out of string theory. We can only use a bottom-up approach. And in the bottom-up approach, your main guide is that you have some proposal that is self-consistent, and that turns out to be an extremely stringent ones. And so the approach that I'm going to pursue here, so it's not exactly like ADS. DS can't be exactly like ADS. ADS has a very special feature that if you take a bulk slice, the time on the bulk and the boundary are the same thing. And so the states on the bulk can be identified with the states on the boundary. Here, if we would like to, we don't know what to keep from ADS and what to throw away, and we have to do it in a way that is all self-consistent, and we also have to throw in various factors of I that are required by the quantum entanglement, required by the analytic continuation, and we have to do all this in a self-consistent way. And so there are different versions of DS-CFT, but what I'm proposing here is we keep the fact that the holographic plate should live at the boundary of the space-time. And so in DS, that puts it up here. We can often, this is a Penrose diagram for DS. Each point would be a 2-sphere except at the boundary, so that the whole thing sews together into a 1-sphere. Now, and let me call these regions the future, the past, the southern static patch, and the northern Pacific patch. I'm going to be drawing this a lot. And now something very interesting happens, and this question was asked about 10 years ago in a paper I wrote with Jim Sung Ng. Where can the states live here? At ADS, they just live at the boundary. It's very simple. Where can we have the states? Well, up here we have a three-dimensional CFT. Let me draw this a little better. Just the top. So this is an S3. The conformal group, the isometry group of De Sitter, SO41, is the conformal group of S3. And in a three-dimensional CFT, the states can only live on a two-sphere, and we should put it in the boundary because that's where the CFT is. And by the state operator correspondence, if we put an operator here, it would, the path integral on this sphere would give the, on the three-sphere would give a state on the two-sphere there. But now, how does that relate to a bulk space? Well, here again, I'm going to borrow something from ADS CFT. I'm going to say that the state on a given two-sphere in the boundary of DS3 corresponds to the bulk state on a space like a bulk slice that ends at that two-sphere. And that can happen in DS. So you could have an R3 slice that does this. But actually, there's a second one that that does this. Now, if we take the union of the red and the blue R3 slices, that is a global space-like slice in De Sitter space. We can put a bulk space in there. And on the other hand, for every bulk space, we can get two boundary states. So depending on whether we look at the quantum state here or the quantum state here, and so that, and I'll make this more precise later, but that leads to, and this is sort of the punchline of the whole talk, that the bulk state in DS4, it belongs to the double of the Hilbert space of the CFT3. So this situation is tailor-made for the emergence of the De Sitter space from some kind of thermal field double state in the boundary quantum field theory. And I want to say that the analog, if we're trying to understand the basic ideas in from ADS in the DS context, the analog of the, we shouldn't think of the construction of DSC as an analog of this picture. We should think of it as an analog of this picture. Because here it's also true that a bulk state is two CFT slices. And here we've got a bulk state is two CFT slices. And here we've got a horizon and four natural regions of the space-time. And we also do over here. So I want to say that the way we should think about ADS3 or the De Sitter ground state is as a generalization of the thermal field double construction for anti-De Sitter space, and that's exactly what's going to turn out to be. It's going to turn out to be the thermal field double, although interestingly, it will be at the De Sitter temperature 1 over 2 pi times a factor of I, and that comes because the L-naught of the De Sitter, De Sitter CFT is I times the static patch Hamiltonian. Okay, now these pieces that I've written here were around about 10 years ago, and various people talked about this composition and looked at the Hilbert spaces and their entanglement. There's some papers by Hosoya. There's a paper by Ng and, myself, and there was a paper by Maldacena and Pimental. And we all did correct calculations, but we were using the wrong basis. And the basis you want to use to make this all sort of fall out how you wish is the so-called quasi-normal mode basis for De Sitter space. So quasi-normal modes, you're familiar, they're studied around black holes often, and they aren't a complete set of modes for a black hole space-time, and they aren't, but it turns out that though they're very interesting and they're very physical, that what we see when we look at black holes and we throw something at them, but in De Sitter space, they are somehow complete even for a black hole in the near horizon region. And conceptually, we can think of all of the static patch of De Sitter space as being the near horizon region. And it's a well-known mathematical fact that the quasi-normal modes are complete in De Sitter space. And so what did we show? Well, let's consider a massless scalar, box M squared phi equals zero. And this was a paper also about 10 years ago, Jeffress, Lupsaska, Ng, and myself. We found a sort of surprising, well, it seemed surprising at the time, less so now, completeness of the quasi-normal mode decomposition in De Sitter space. So what do we have? A quasi-normal mode would be something which dies exponentially in the static patch. That would be a quasi-normal mode for the southern static patch. So it will have a singularity along here and decay exponentially along here. We have some kind of delta function up here. And these things are also highest weight. If we view them as representations of the conformal group, they fall into multiplets of the SO41 conformal group. And so they're highest weight representations of the conformal group. And so they are the kind of object, they're the kind of representation that we would anyway be studying if we were studying the CFT3 duo. Okay, so let me just write down one of them. Phi plus or minus quasi-normal is equal to phi plus or minus quasi-normal is equal to 1 over sinh t, where t is just the standard global time, not a killing time, minus cosh t sinh psi, where psi is the polar angle around here, plus or minus I epsilon, all to the h plus or minus, where h plus or minus is equal to 9/4 plus or minus 9/4 minus m squared. And we're considering only the region where this is real and not an integer. So that's a big region, and I'm not sure, we're a little confused about how to think about the other regions. There seem to be some conceptually interesting and new things that go on, but this is the region we're studying. And so that looks like this. And then there's also psi plus or minus anti-quasi-normal modes. And they're singular along this line instead. So they decay exponentially in the northern diamond, if we flip north and south, quasi-normal and anti-quasi-normal split, and these are the quasi-normal modes here that I've written. Of course, they're there are eigenstates of L naught, where L naught is the killing vector, which is time-like in the static patch. There's some static patch time. They're just the derivative with respect to that. And they are also, if you work out the raising operators, they're annihilated by all the raising operators. So they're also highest weight states. Similarly, the anti-quasi-normal modes will be lowest weight states, and they'll also be eigenstates of all naught, but they'll be annihilated by all the raising operators. Okay. Now, what we wanted to do is construct a different class of modes, and I'm going to need four of them here. So there's a close connection here between what I'm going to call Rindler physics, and in celestial holography, it will be Rindler physics, because we're characterizing everything instead of angular momentum, eigenstates, we're characterizing everything in terms of different kinds of viewing this as a conformal group. So the boost, we're diagonalizing the boost weight, which is like Rindler energy. And these have branch cuts in them at H plus or minus. And using that fact, you can take a judicious linear combination which vanishes in half the space-time. So we can consider an alternate complete basis. That looks like this, a sort of Rindler decomposition of the complete basis. And I forgot to say that one of the results from Jeffers and Ng is that you get a complete basis with just the plus. Plus and minus are shadows of one another, so it's redundant to keep both of them. So we have just the plus, and now we have a complete basis, one of which has support only in this region, one of which has support only in this region, one of which support has only in this region, and one of, which one did I miss here? This, no. Thank you, Sabrina, okay. So one has, and we're gonna label these regions F, future, past, north, and south. So we have mode like phi, future, north. That's this one. And in addition, this isn't quite the complete basis. We also need to take all the descendants with respect to the elements of the conformal group. So let's put a multi-index B here to indicate all the descendants. So these four kinds of conformal primary modes and their descendants are a complete basis for anti-de Sitter space. And that was a pretty subtle and surprising statement when we made it about de Sitter space 10 years ago. And we're now struggling with what the same statement is in Minkowski space, where it seems to be even more subtle. Okay. Now, given these modes, we can construct field hat operators, field operators. These modes depend on X. But if we take their Klein-Gordon inner product with the field operator, phi hat of X, we get something which doesn't depend on X because we've integrated over X. So this has all the quantum numbers of an operator in the boundary conformal field theory. So phi hat bn, I want to identify as an object by the De Sitter bulk to boundary dictionary, as an object which acts naturally on the boundary conformal field theory in a way that's completely dictated by the symmetries. Now we have what's, oh, and of course there's some commutation relations between these operators. And obviously south, those which are supported in the north don't must commute with those which are, has to commute with this guy. And this guy has to commute with, I'm not sure what I drew here. Oh yeah, this, whatever I drew there. Okay, so northern operators and southern operators must commute. And so we have some commutation relations which are determined by SO4, 1 group theory, which says that phi hat PSA, phi hat FSB is equal to INAB, and ditto for S goes exchanging south and north, but north and south operators commute with each other. Now already right here we see we have two copies of the conformal field theory. South and north commute with each other, and each one contains an operator which is isomorphic with the space of operators in the conformal field theory. And now we have a very simple bulk reconstruction formula. So if we want to take the bulk field operator, we can write it as e to the I, the inverse of this. Again, these are just computed by group theory. They're gamma functions and so on. And we have things like phi A PS hat, and then phi B FS as a function of X. And there's three more terms. And the point is, the construction of the bulk reconstruction formula requires not one, as it would in ADS, but two distinct conformal field theories. And because of the support of these wave functions, if you want to use the bulk reconstruction formula in here, you only need southern operators, northern operators. Here you only need southern operators. Here you need both, and here you also need both. So the point is, much like on that original black hole diagram in ADS-Schwarzschild, and this was news to me having thought about DSCFT for a long time, really we should think of one copy of the conformal field theory as being dual to a static patch, because we only need the operators in the static patch to reproduce any correlation functions of the bulk field operators in there. We were expecting something kind of different. Well, okay, so we have two operators, we have two regions, two conformal field theories due to two regions. When we construct the thermal field double, we get something where the entanglement produces the F and P regions. So here we're seeing an example in which quantum entanglement produces a whole universe, not just a wormhole between some black holes. Okay, so I'm skipping some things here because I'm running out of time, but the statement in the end is that there's a thermal field double, e to the I pi L naught, NAB phi hat PSA, phi hat PNB on a three-dimensional vacuum. That's equal to Minkowski space. That's Minkowski space written as a thermal field double with temperature T equals 1 over 2 pi I in the tensor product of the CFT 3 Hilbert space. Now we can take trace over the north of the Euclidean, this is equal to the Euclidean vacuum, the 2D, the 3D representation of it. We can trace this, and we get e to the 2 pi I, e to the minus 2 pi I L naught, which is e to the minus 2 pi times the static patch Hamiltonian. We had to get that, of course, unless we made a mistake. So we reproduce the Rindler formula, but in a different basis. And now we've answered another question, which I'm very happy about, which is that the Rindler wedge partition function in the bulk in De Sitter space, or the southern patch partition function, is dual to the partition function of the boundary CFT3 at temperature T equals 2 pi I. And one of the problems in DSCFT, as I've stated in obscure talks here and there, is that there was no natural formula for the De Sitter entropy. But now we do understand what the De Sitter entropy should be. And so that seems like some progress. I guess I better stop there. I wanted to say more about, there's an interesting analytic continuation to get an instanton which computes this. And also it should be ditto for celestial holography, where now we're talking about the Rindler wedges giving rise to the past and the future wedges. But I'll stop there.
We're doing great on time. We have now time for questions. And at Perimeter, we have a fun game that we do with our mic on with the questions. So Ivan is going to be one of our mic runners. And then is Elisa here? Or OK, Elisa, come. We're going to throw these microphones around to anybody in person with the questions. And I think we have a Zoom buddy, is Rob, is going to field the ones.
Sorry, there's one up here.
Okay.
Sorry, what is the significance of an imaginary temperature here? I mean, it's just the sitter. Wouldn't you expect it to be a real number?
It's where the math leads you. And certainly, there are lots of eyes around in this subject. So already, when you analytically continue L naught, I mean, the culprit is that L naught, the vector field, is space-like up here. And the CFT3 lives up here. And and whereas here, it's time-like. And that's where the bulk lives. So there's a kind of analytic continuation related to the eye. Now, we were already used to the fact that the eigenvalues of L naught in this, it's not a unitary CFT. And I've often heard the reaction, it's not unitary. But the group theory tells you it can't be unitary. I mean, it's not bad that it's not unitary. And there's nothing to do with, there's no relationship between space-time unitarity and unitarity of the CFT. It does, however, mean that it's a class of CFTs that we're not so familiar. There is some work on non-unitary CFTs. They do arise in condensed matter contexts. But it does mean that some of the, if we want to apply the standard results from CFT, you know, we have to think about whether they assumed unitarity or not. But yeah, the direction, this partition function, which Sabrina just erased, it's evolving in imaginary time. So it's a Lorentzian partition function, right? And that means that this calculation is best thought of in 2-2 signature. In other words, the geometry that would naturally be dual would be if you, and I'm sneaking in what I was going to say, if you continued in this direction, the geometry, if you wanted to Wick rotate this, then you get an ADS2 times an S2 fibered over ADS2 with all minuses, and it looks just like the minus minus ADS2 that Moldacena had in 2004 or something. So you're naturally led to 2,2 signature, which people in amplitudes 2,2 has become an indispensable dual. So it's certainly not unitary, but that's sort of 90% of this project is trying to understand where all the eyes go and why they're there. And fortunately, it seems to be largely determined by self-consistency.
Hello, did you ask me to unmute? Did I get it correctly?
We can hear you.
Oh, okay, wonderful. Thanks, Andy, for this amazing talk. I just want to understand if from the perspective of cosmology, we care about the most out of the static patch, which are the out of the horizon, but we know they are classical. Is that a good understanding that these modes, which are out of the static patch, wouldn't change your argument?
I couldn't hear everything you said, but in cosmology, you tend to want to have a big bang. And that would be, you would put another boundary down here with boundary conditions of the Big Bang. And that really dramatically changes it. When you change the boundary structure, you change it. It's a very interesting problem, and in some ways a more natural problem. The two boundaries are puzzling. But that boundary condition at the Big Bang, like if we put Hartle-Hawking boundary conditions in there, it would kind of relate the quantum state on the, that of course is what we did when we made the thermal field double, that was the Hartle-Hawking state. It gives you a relationship between operators in the two different CFTs. So those are very interesting questions, but not exactly the ones I'm addressing here. But worth addressing.
We have a couple over here.
Yeah, I was trying to understand, Andy, what was the claim? So I understand correlations between the North and South Pole, but this is not how I think about the state on the future's cry. So is the statement that the state on the future's cry is an entangled state between two copies coming from the North and North-South Poles?
Yeah, I see. Yeah, well, the claim is that... you have a bulk reconstruction formula. You have a 3D CFT. And the claim is that you can write down...
Where is the 3D CFT?
The 3D CFT is the thing... Yeah, the 3D CFT is the thing that you would define by taking bulk correlators. So this is all bottom up. So we imagine we have some, in the example, in some low-energy effective field theory, a description of De Sitter space and its excitations. And then we take correlators and we push them up there, and the geometry and symmetry of De Sitter space force them to take the form of a CFT3. So that CFT3 is bottom-up defined from the collection of correlators in De Sitter space. And now the question is, by state or operator correspondence, you also have states associated with every operator you can find in this way. And the claim is that if you have two copies, You have a bulk reconstruction formula, which relates bulk field operators to operators which create states in the boundary CFT, and that you can write down very explicitly a thermal field double state in the tensor product of the CFT3 Hilbert space with itself, which has the property that the bulk operators defined by the bulk reconstruction formula have exactly the right set of correlation functions.
Let's divert the rest of the questions to the coffee break. There's also going to be a gather time on for people on Zoom. So let's thank Andy again.